If you have your Bibles, you might want to turn to Psalm 39, which we shall read together now. Psalm 39, Psalm of David. I said, I will watch my ways and keep my tongue from sin. I will put a muzzle on my mouth while in the presence of the wicked. So I remained utterly silent, not even saying anything good. But my anguish increased. My heart grew hot within me. While I meditated, the fire burned, and then I spoke with my tongue. Show me, Lord, my life's end and the number of my days. Let me know how fleeting my life is, for you have made my days a mere handbreadth, and the span of my years is nothing before you. Everyone is but breath, even those who seem secure. Surely everyone goes around like a mere phantom. In vain they rush about, heaping wealth, without knowing whose it will finally be. But now, Lord, what do I look for? My hope is in you. Save me from all my transgressions. Do not make me the scorn of fools. I was silent. I would not open my mouth, for you are the one who has done this. Remove your scourge from me. I am overcome by the blow of your hand. When you rebuke and discipline anyone for their sin, you consume their wealth like a moth. Surely everyone is but breath. Hear my prayer, Lord. Listen to my cry for help. Do not be deaf to my weeping. I dwell with you as a foreigner, a stranger, as all my ancestors were. Look away from me that I may enjoy life again before I depart and am no more. I do enjoy the Psalms. But there are some psalms that you think, well, I wouldn't fancy preaching on that one. And that's Psalm 39. It's not the most encouraging of psalms. Psalm 24, yes, preach all day on that one. But Psalm 39, it's a very honest psalm in many ways and many things to teach us. You know, it's a great relief at times to be honest with God. There are times when we're not very honest with the Lord. We, at times, don't really tell him how we're feeling, even though he knows everything that's going on. Sometimes we realize it's pointless to put on a cloak of religious hypocrisy and pretend to ourselves and others that our Christian life is good and going on well. Sometimes we make out that we're living a victorious Christian life, but we're not. Sometimes we make out that God is answering all our prayers when really sometimes we're just talking to the ceiling. There are times when we go through, there are difficult times in our Christian life, in our Christian walk. Times when God seems rather distant and we feel a bit out of sorts. And the psalmist David finds himself in that situation here now. And I suppose it's a breath of honesty as far as the psalmist is concerned here. How wonderful God is that he understands that we do go at times through difficult experiences and difficult situations. Times when, yes, God does seem different, distant. God understands when at times we feel a bit desperate. When we feel at our lowest. And that's where the psalmist is now. At his very lowest point. No point in pretending. No point in making up that everything's well. He's been very, very honest here. Series of psalms from 35 to 39 that speak about David's cry for help and support. But he covers a fair bit of ground in this short psalm. In the first three verses, of course, he's asking God for self-control, that he doesn't verbally lash out in the midst of all that he's going through. He speaks about watching his ways, keeping a tongue from sinning, wise counsel. When we go through difficult times, everything seems to be against us. We tend to lash out, be angry. He says, I'm going to watch my ways. I'm going to be silent. And as we look at the first three verses, we see something of his honesty coming through here. And it's very helpful to realize that. We're not alone when we go through trying and difficult times. So what does the psalmist teach us here now then? Firstly, his reaction to the traumatic circumstances he's going through. We often, and we always really associate David with singing psalms and songs and making music. But now, he's silent, keeping his tongue. Why is this? Well, God has rebuked him for sin, very open. God has told him how displeased he is with him, and he knows better than to argue with God. And sometimes when we sin and we fall out of favor with God by our own actions, sometimes when we feel a little bit lost and we want to argue, we want to make excuses instead of confessions. And we give reasons for not escaping that particular temptation that brought us into sin. Well, it was this, that, and the other. But David didn't do that. He's come to the point where now he has to be honest. He's silent. He doesn't want to say thing in anger and make the situation worse. And he's conscious of the fact that he's surrounded by others, the ungodly around him. And we have to remember that when we go through difficult and trying situations as believers, the world loves to watch. The world takes notice. And always remember, of course, throughout the scriptures, we're told to imitate Christ. But there are times when we do the very opposite. So, David says, I'm going to guard my tongue. I'm going to be careful here. Guard my tongue against what? Anger, criticism, impatience, language. I'm going to keep my tongue from sinning any further, says David. Came across this lovely quote. It said this: why would the ungodly, the worldly, think that godliness pays dividends if in traumatic circumstances we behave no different from the rest of the world? When we go through situations that try us and test us, that's the time when the world watches. And what do they see? Resentment, anger. David says, I will watch my ways. I will keep my tongue from sin. I will put a muzzle in my mouth while in the presence of the wicked, so that I will not make the situation worse. So I remained utterly silent, not even saying anything good. He was absolutely silent. But then, of course, verse 3, something happens. My heart grew hot within me. While I meditated, the fire burned. Then I spoke with my tongue. He was like a volcano ready to erupt. He's bursting to do something, to say something. But he doesn't want to say something that he's going to regret. He doesn't want to do something that will make his situation before God worse. And it's building up within him. It doesn't explode, fortunately. Instead, in the midst of all that's building up with him, all this perhaps resentment, perhaps anger, perhaps questioning as to why God is distant, why God is so against him because of it, why God is so against his sin, why God is so dealing with him like this. In the midst of this, we have that wonderful verse 4. Listen to all of us. Show me, Lord, my life's end and the number of my days. Let me know how fleeting my life is. You have made the days of me a handbreadth. Span of my years is nothing before you. Everything but a breath, even those who seem secure. Surely everyone goes around like a mere phantom. They ruin vain and rush about heaping up wealth without knowing whose it will finally be. David, instead of exploding with anger and resentment and frustration, he thinks about the situation. He meditates on it. And in so doing, he learns some very valuable lessons. Notice the direction of his reflection here. He turns to prayer. He talks to his Lord. Sometimes that's the last thing we do when we go into a difficult trial or temptation or situation. The last thing we do. But David has come to an end of himself now. He doesn't know where to go. He's kept himself quiet. He doesn't want to make the situation worse. What can he do? Show me, Lord. Show me. That's a cry of desperation, is it not? He's come to an end of himself. He doesn't understand the situation. He can't do anything about it. God seems distant. He's been very honest. And he comes to the point of verse 4. Show me, Lord. Finally, he turns to God. Finally, he turns to the one who has the answer to all that he's going through. He meditates on God. Again, lovely quote I came across. At this point, David needs to confess and gain the divine and eternal perspective. He needs to come to terms with his own humanity. There are situations in our life and problems that come upon us that we just cannot deal with ourselves. Much as we try, much as we get frustrated, we just cannot seem to deal with it. What's the answer? David knew the answer eventually. Show me, Lord. Show me what to do. Show me the way forward. Show me how to get out of this, Lord. I need you. Because in myself, I cannot deal with it. That's honesty, isn't it? And that's the position that so often we need to find ourselves in or bring ourselves to. To be honest with God, we're not really going on with the Lord like we should. We're sinning where we shouldn't. God seems distant and he should be near. His word isn't fresh to us. Fellowship and worship isn't what it used to be. And we try our best, but fail. Show me, Lord. Finally, David comes to his senses. He cannot deal with this. God, you've got to deal with it. You've got to show me. And the phrase life's end really means purpose of life here. David is asking in actual fact, why am I here? What is happening to me? And a major part of coping with our lives in difficult circumstances is to ask God to show us the purpose for our life. He has a purpose. God has a purpose for each and every one of us to belong to him. Lord, show me, he's saying. Show me the point of my living now, says David. What am I? Where am I going? What's wrong? One of the questions of the Westminster Catechism is, what is the chief end of man? You could all echo it back on you. To glorify God and enjoy him forever. But David wasn't glorifying God in this situation. Neither do we when we go through these difficult situations and when we try and deal with it ourselves. So how do we glorify God then in this situation? How does David glorify God in this situation? Well, there's two words, isn't it? Trust and obey. Trust and obey. And that comes out as we go through. Simple as that. Not by my own efforts, my own achievements, my own intellect, anything like that. Simply trust and obey God. Couldn't be simpler, but sometimes it's the hardest thing to do, isn't it? Give way. Be honest. You cannot do it yourself. Trust God. Obey God. He says in verse 6, I don't know how long this life's going to last. You know, we could all say that, don't we? And yet, David, up that point, was wasting his life. And that's sometimes our situation. We do things and we're just wasting our life away. And yet, how fleeting it is, we've already said. And as one commentator said, it's a teacher's a lesson. It's not the length of life that counts, it's the depth of life. Isn't that true? It's not the length, but the depth of life that counts. And I thought about that, and I just looked up one or two things. David Brainerd, a wonderful missionary, did great things for God. He died at the age of 29. Robert Mary McSheeny, the great Scottish preacher, what a tremendous ministry. He died at 29-year-old. Jim Elliot, great pioneer and missionary. Great things for God. He died aged 29. Eric Liddell, great runner, never got to 40. And Jim Elliot, of course, who died seeking to bring the gospel to heathen natives, he said this: he is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. Isn't that true? I don't want to waste my life anymore, says David. I want to be in business with you. I want to be right. Show me, Lord, how to be have a loving, wonderful fellowship and relationship with you that I might go on with you. And that's being honest. We could say, don't argue with God, but fill your life with excuses. Rather, shouldn't we come to the Lord as David says, Lord, make my life count for something. Let me be honest. Let my life count for something. In the light of eternity, does it really matter if we have to go through times of difficulties and trials? We trust and obey, and God will bring us through it, and that will count towards our living for him. Remember some years ago doing exams, ministry exams, and I'd do essays sent off to St. John in Stirling. I sent one essay off and came back, big red letters, could do better. Could do better. Wow, what a deflation that was. Next one, I had to do a paper on Spurgeon, a downgrade theory. That was a hard title to start with, let alone do it. When I got it back, what did he say? That's better. That's better. And you know, if we were to stand before the Lord being honest, what could he say of you and me right now? Could do better. You could do better. You could save me better. You could love me better. You could read my word better. You could serve one another better. You could live for me as a witness in the world better. Wouldn't it be lovely at the end of a particular week in our prayers, somehow the Lord said to us, that's better. That's better. Now you're trying. Now you're trusting me. Now you're following me. Now you're walking with me. But then verse 7. But now, Lord, what do I look for? And again, my hope is in you. My hope is in you. That's a statement of confidence now. How far he's come in a few verses just because he's been honest with God. Just because he's really been honest. When he's really seeking to trust Lord, he then comes to this point. My hope is in you. Not me anymore. My confidence, my hope is in you now, God. I've tried, but now I need to know you with me. A confidence born of faith, hope, and love, as Paul said in 1 Corinthians 13. When we have faith in God, we claim his promises. They give us hope for the future. And God controls the future, of course he does. Hope is more important than just a good feeling. It's a confidence that God is in control of our lives. Of course it is. And then verses 8 to 11, especially verse 9. I was silent. I would not open my mouth. He'd been honest. For you were the one who has done this. David is saying, it's just dawned on me. You were sovereign, Lord. You're in control of everything. And your will is beyond my understanding. Your eternal purposes are beyond my comprehension. You've allowed these things to happen, Lord. Knowing that it would discipline me and help me to grow in my confidence with you. What a statement, eh? Why do we have to go through trying and testing times? Times when God seems distant. Times when we feel angry and frustrated. Is it not, says David, because you are testing me? Testing my hope and my confidence? It just dawned on me, he says. I was silent, wouldn't open my mouth. But you're the one that's done all this. You are in control of all this, Lord. So everything we go through, whether it be problems or difficulties or high points or whatever, he is in control. God is never taken by surprise. And times we have to go through difficult experiences that we might grow in our faith. Wow. And it's true that God can be glorified through our response when we deal with these situations. When we find ourselves caused to fail in our walk and witness before the world and before others, Peter says that we've been born again into a living hope. And the more the roots of hope go deeper, the more the fruit will bring forth joy, confidence, and encouragement, and trust. What a wonderful revelation. All because David was being honest with his situation. All because he comes to the point where he asks God to deal with it. Show me, Lord. I can't do it. You come in, Lord, and deal with it. So he comes to the point of saying, now I know why I had to go through that. Now I know. Because you, Lord, are in control. And that brings greater confidence and greater encouragement to go on with him, doesn't it? And the next time problems and difficulties come, we know that we can trust him, not trust in ourselves. Valuable lessons in our Christian life and walk with the Lord. And then in verses 12 and 13, with God's sovereignty now in mind, we come to the conclusion. What does he say? Hear my prayer, Lord. Listen to my cry for help. Do not be deaf to my weeping. I dwell with you as a foreigner, a stranger, as my ancestors were. Look away from me that I may enjoy life again before I depart them no more. I want to know the joy of living for you, Lord. Strange thing he says there. He dwells as a foreigner, a stranger, as his ancestors done. But what he's really saying is that God is far from him, and God's favour is far away. He's away from God's grace, and somehow God is punishing him for his sins. That's what he's thinking. So much that he became depressed. Look again for me that I may enjoy life again. Lord, lift your hand. Let me know the joy of your presence, the joy of living for you, the joy of walking with you. Show me, you are my hope. Help me to know that wonderful relationship with you again. I've heard it said sometimes that the standards set by Christ to follow him are too high. And I can understand why people over the years have said that to me. The standards are too high. Of course they are. And we can never reach them by our own ability and our own efforts. We need the confidence to trust God and obey God. that whatever comes upon us, and God doesn't immune us from problems and difficulties, health situations and all that sort of stuff. We're not immune to life's difficulties. But we must be honest. We must be honest with God and say, we can't deal with them ourselves. We want you. And God comes in and he uses those very situations to show his glory and his purpose and his power for our lives. Never reached the standards they set, but he encourages to reach higher. So David admits his hurt and dismay and his lack of trust in God. He asks God to relieve the pain that he might smile again, enjoy life again, because he's learned the lesson. I know I often say this, but it's true. And one of the lessons is, of course, keep short accounts with God. David should have been quicker to come to God. He should have been quicker to confess. He should have been quicker to seek to know God's presence and purpose for his life. But he was too busy trying to do it himself and look after himself. We need to learn to be dependent and to trust him more, whatever the situation. And quick to follow his instructions, whatever they might be. Seek him in prayer. Seek him through his word. Seek him through fellowship with others. Put real trust and hope in a God who knows everything, who's with us in everything, if only we will but know it. Because ultimately he wants the best for us. Of course he does. Remember, he is sovereign. He knows everything. I remember a little story once told. There was a passenger on a ship, an ocean liner, sailing along. And he was very concerned because there was some fog on the deck. And he said to one of the crew members, look, I'm very worried by this fog. I can't really see the way forward. There's hidden things here that I'm in danger. And the guy saw, the sailor saw that this guy was in distress. He said, come see the captain. So he took him up onto the captain's bridge, went in to see the captain. And he explained to the captain, said, look out the window. It was as clear as a day. The fog was only just a bit above the deck. Clear as the day. The captain said, I've got everything under control. You can't see, but I can see. Trust me, said the captain. And that's the same with God. We go two times, we're in a mist, we're in a fog. Problems, difficulties. We could get angry, frustrated. But God sees above that. Go up and talk to the captain. David did. He went up and he talked to God. You are my hope. Show me, Lord. Show me what is ahead. Show me where I'm going through. Lift me above this that I'm struggling with. Remember, God seeks no delight in seeing us live with anger and bad feelings, problems and difficulties. He wants us to look to him. David was honest. His only answer was to turn to God. And God answered, blessed him, encouraged him. Let me finish with this lovely quote. It goes like this. Let us make every thought captive in Christ. And when we are frustrated, let's stop for a moment and pray for the object of our frustration. It's hard to feel negatively when you are praying for someone or praying for a situation. Make every thought captive and your thoughts will not turn into words. And why are we to live like this? Not for our glory, although people might think us better for doing so, but we must always do it for God's glory and for the building of his kingdom. May God help us to again apply his word to our daily lives.